Welcome. Welcome again, everyone. And for those who joined us after we began, nice to see you and have you with us. Like I said earlier, instead of going around the room and introducing ourselves, please take a look at everyone's beautiful face and see who's with us today. It's my real pleasure to introduce our guest teacher this evening, someone who has been with us regularly as a guest teacher over these many years, Reverend Digon Gaither. He is a Soto Zen priest in the tradition of Suzuki Roshi. Suzuki Roshi is the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara and Green Gulch. And for more than a decade, Digon lived at the Zen Center and still practices there. He was also one of the co-founder of the Queer Dharma Group over at the Zen Center. He's got a master's degree in Buddhist studies with a certificate in chaplaincy and Soto Zen Dharma. Digon teaches internationally, we're really honored and to have him as a real friend of our Sangha. So, Digon, welcome.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you all. It's nice to see familiar faces and also to see new faces. And I look forward to the time when we can breathe the same air together. I had a talk that I was gonna give, and then I got a gift from a friend, which was a copy of the book by Rod Owens called Love and Rage, The Path of Liberation Through Anger. And what's interesting is that I actually have, because Rod and I are friends, I have seen parts of this book already. So I didn't really expect to have a strong reaction to something very early in the book, which I think I might have seen, but I can't remember if I had or not. The joy of getting older is that I get to pretend that things are new. So in this, he says, we've learned how to pack everything away because we're really interested and invested in being good people. You can say, I'm a good person. I'm not a misogynist. I'm not transphobic. I'm a good person. Sometimes being a good person or my attachment to being a good person actually gets in the way of looking at all the rough spots, all the shadows that I'm working with. I don't even go there anymore. I don't care about being good. I care about actually being in relationship to the shadows, to the hurt, to the woundedness, to the rage, and to the ways in which I'm really addicted and attached to power. And so my talk sort of changed a little bit because I want to talk a bit about this shadow part of our lives, right? Like, we all have this idea of who we are, and we have this idea about how it is that we are in the world and how other people see us. And sometimes we can let that convince us of something. I like to think of it in terms of, you know, I get an idea in my head and I pour concrete on it so that it just stays there immobile. And this concretizing, this making it immobile, sort of traps me then in that process, in that thought process. And in particular, you know, the ideas and the parts of our lives that are difficult for us, the parts of our lives where we're grieving, where we're sad, where we're depressed, these parts of our lives where it takes a little bit more effort to give those space and room to breathe and to work with them and to let them help transform us. And in the book, Rod's particularly talking about anger. For about 40 of my 50 plus years, a lot of people would tell you that I was angry, or tell me that I was angry. And I never understood it. And particularly because I didn't really want to own the angry part of my life. I'm an activist. I wanted to be engaged, and the way that people spoke about my anger often had a veil to it of their discomfort, or had a veil to it of it was a problem for somebody. And so I spent a large part of my life trying to sort of think about, and particularly when I got to Zen Center, I moved into a spiritual community, and I thought that this would help me to be more expansive with people, to be less judgmental, to be all of these things, right? We think, oh, I'm going to move into this community and all these people are spiritual and it's going to be grand. And then you get there and you realize that you're still you. You know, you get there and you see yourself repeatedly. And you have to sort of look at it and think, oh, is that really how I want to respond to this situation, to this person in this moment? And so, you know, it's really easy for us to not acknowledge that, you know, the work of transformation, the work of liberation, is kind of hard, and that something happens when you slow down and when you create space for yourself and you start to notice all of the difficulties and the ways that you are in the world that maybe you don't really appreciate. Or I love that Rod calls it loving those parts of ourselves. You know, learning how to love myself enough to unpack those trainings that I've received, unpack those ideas that I have, unpack those ways of being in the world that I don't really want to acknowledge, and take a look at them so that I'm not dragged around by them. You know, because this is the interesting thing about our shadows. As long as they're secrets, as long as we keep them hidden from ourselves, as long as we don't give them air, they drag us around and they make choices for us about our behaviors and about our reactions and about how we feel about things or how we are going to approach things. I mean, the interesting thing about, we call them shadows, and what's interesting is if you put a little light on the shadow, it doesn't stay a shadow, right? Like, it becomes something else. And I think that that this is actually the toughest part about Buddhist practice. This commitment to keep turning towards the suffering, ours and the rest of the world, to keep turning towards the places in ourselves that are difficult. You know, the request is always to just, and particularly in meditation and in the way that meditation is practiced in Soto Zen in particular is to just keep meeting the moment. Keep turning towards it. I remember early on in my practice, I went to my teacher and I was like, I'm really struggling against my depression. I've had depression my whole life, and some days it just, for long periods of time, it will completely incapacitate me. And I told my teacher that I was really struggling with my depression. And he asked me a really simple question, which was, what would happen if you didn't struggle with it? How would it be different if you just met it? Like, just be depressed for a minute. And it was very interesting because I had spent my entire life thinking that the way to handle depression was to push your way through it, pull myself up by my bootstraps, and, you know, and you move into a temple and they say, follow the schedule completely. And, you know, the bell rings at 5 o'clock in the morning and you're expected to get up, get out of bed and head to the Zendo. I was still able to do it, but I couldn't, it was such a struggle every day. And it was the first time that anybody had ever said to me, like, well, just don't struggle against it. Like, be depressed. And what's interesting is that as soon as I stopped struggling against it, it stopped dragging me around. It stopped making choices for me. Now, it didn't get any easier to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. But it also didn't, it wasn't exhausting to go through my day anymore and put on that face of not depressed, right? Because I live in a spiritual community, I'm a monk, I'm supposed to like be this image, right? And when I could just tell the truth to myself, but also to the rest of the world, this is my experience, I stopped being dragged around by the parts of it that I didn't like, by the shadow pieces of turning it inward and hating myself and turning it inward and getting angry and you know, all of those things, right? And so, you know, this idea that Rod has of, you know, getting wed to our perceptions of ourselves. And, you know, I mean, the same thing happens in queer communities, right? Like, we have this idea of who we are as queer people. And some of that's because of how we are with each other, and some of it's also, you know, our history of oppression and ghettoization and the ways in which we've had to push back against heteronormativity. But it's very interesting to me to think about who I am today as a queer person versus who I was 15 years ago as a queer person. My identity, my understanding of what it means for me to be queer is different. Now, part of that's, you know, growing older and having some maturity, but also there is a very large part of it being that I stopped sort of buying everyone else's ideas about being a gay man. In the same way that I had to stop buying my conservative religious family's ideas about being a gay man, eventually I had to stop buying my own community's ideas about it. And then I had to stop buying my own ideas about it. Some of which, you know, some of which surprises me, right? Like you wake up one day and you realize like, oh, wait, no, that's, what did you convince yourself of? And why did you convince yourself of this? And so anybody who's heard me teach understands that, you know, I really think about two major practices in Buddhism. The first is this call to being who I want to be in the world. In Zen, we say that enlightenment is merely an appropriate response. So over and over and over again, I want to practice in such a way that I can continue to get closer and closer and closer to that appropriate response, whatever it is. And it's not a matter of deciding something, you know, I've taken vows to do no harm, and so therefore that means that in every situation I do this thing, right? What it really means is can I meet each moment over and over and over again with as much honesty about my experience of that moment as I can muster? And that includes what I bring into the moment, what the people who I'm sharing the moment with bring into it. And together, coming close to what's an appropriate response. And the other thing is this practice of embodiment. And when I talk about embodiment, what I really mean is take the space of your body, recognize that everything that you can possibly imagine exists in your own experience of your body. So what I'm working with, trying to create space for my shadow pieces, those moments of confrontation against ideas about how I want to be in the world, what that really means is first I have to come to my body and feel like, where is that lives? You know, where does that anger live? Where does that hurt live? Where does it live? What's it feel like? What's the color of it? What's the physical experience of this moment? And the great thing about practicing with our bodies is that our bodies completely tie us to this moment. When I check in with my body, I'm always checking in with this present moment. My body doesn't experience itself or have ideas the way the mind does about past or future. It only connects me to right now. And so the more that I can stay connected to this body, to stay connected to my experience of the world through this body, in this body, and not be at war with all of the pieces of this body, I can start to then learn how to create space for those more difficult moments of anger or rage or misogyny or racism or all of the things that I, you know, have been trained in. And I get to settle into not being dragged around. I'm going to read this once again, and then I want to open it up for questions or comments, or y'all can, we can play Stump the Monk, which is my favorite game. We've learned how to pack everything away because we're really invested in being good people. You can say, I'm a good person. I'm not a misogynist. I'm not transphobic. I'm not racist. I'm a good person. sometimes being a good person or my attachment to being a good person actually gets in the way of me looking at all the rough spots, at all the shadows that I'm working with. I don't even go there anymore. I don't care about being good. I care about actually being in relationship to the shadows, to the hurt, to the woundedness, to the rage, and to the ways in which I'm really addicted and attached to power. So maybe let's have an opportunity to not attach so much to being good and come into relationship with our own experience and let that lead us. Thank you for your attention. I don't know how we do the question and answer portion here.
I guess if somebody wants to ask a question, Dagon, maybe they could raise their hand and then I'll unmute them, or that you can unmute yourself if you want to ask a question.
Perfect, Deborah. Thank you.
Dagon.
Hi.
Hey. So I love the quote, and I thought, I guess I'm just curious about the power thing at the end, what that means to you.
I think that my commitment to being a good person is really tied to this idea that being a good person then gives me some kind of authority or power, you know? I often, you know, one of the interesting things that happens when you ordain is, you know, on one hand, you sort of walk around with the sticker that says, bring your suffering here, which is a quote from Darlene Cohen. But the other really interesting thing about it is that people bring all kinds of ideas about what that means and who that person is that has taken ordination. And not just in Zen communities, in the world in general, when I say to people, oh, I'm a Zen priest. And it's really interesting for me to notice my own sort of willingness and attraction to when people sort of venerate that, right? The times I've spent in Theravada monasteries, everybody wants to call you venerable. And I'm just sort of like, wait, no, I'm just a dude, right? Like, I'm just this gay guy who lives in the world. But at the same time, man, it feels good, right? Like, oh my gosh. When people say, oh, you know, you're a good guy, or, you know, have these ideas about you, I can become addicted to that. And so part of my process has to constantly be, appreciate being appreciated, but don't buy the hype, right? Like, don't think that that means anything beyond this moment. Much like when I was at Tassajara for training, and you know, you spent a lot of time meditating, and there were a couple experiences I had that were kind of, for lack of a better word, mystical and magical. And I went to my teacher and I was like, hey, you know, I had this experience. And he's like, okay, go sweep your cabin out. Like, it was just really like, okay, and you're never gonna see it again. So you might as well just get on with your life. And it was really a great opportunity for me to not buy my own hype. So that's my take on that.
Can you flash the book cover and the title and name again?
It's Love and Rage, The Path of Liberation Through Anger, and it's by Lama Rod Owens. And it got released on Friday. And I will, putting more plug in for Rod and the book, I will say that I think that this is such an ideal time for us to think about rage and anger and the shadow parts of our life. I think that we have a really great opportunity here to not go back to normal, right? To let ourselves take this moment and be transformed by them. And that's my wish for everybody. Like, I wish that we all get to be transformed by every moment.
Thank you for this talk. Very, very timely, given I was just weeping like a half hour before the call, and I find myself these days oscillating between rage and rage at our government and sadness. Mm-hmm. And sadness even at our, not only just sadness about the pain of the epidemic, but sadness about our government and those ideals and all of that. I don't really have a question, but just the connection between the rage and the sadness, and even rage and love, is kind of an interesting place. So thank you for the opportunity to think about it.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing that into the space. I have cried more in the last 110 days than I think I have cried my entire life. For friends, I work as a chaplain, I work in hospice, and for people who are isolated and alone and scared, and there's a lot of suffering in the world right now, and it breaks my heart. And I get to turn towards that and let my heart be broken for a few minutes. And so I just cry. And, there's a certain way in which the patriarchy and identity as a cisgendered male or all of those things sort of had taken that ability away from me. And then in my practice, I cried a whole lot more. But the last 110 days have been, it's hard, man. and our practice continually says, don't turn away from it. And so, I don't get to turn away, right? To our government, to people who don't care about other people, to people who pull guns on demonstrators, to all of it. And I just, it's heartbreaking. So thank you for acknowledging that and bringing that. And thank you for crying. Like, please, thank you, yeah.
Thank you so much for your talk and being with us today. Really appreciate it. So as we close, let's sit together for a minute or so, and we'll